Welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Tales of Al, the Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete by Lynn Cox, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters from about animals in our lives. Our first story today comes from Tales of Al by Lynn Cox. In the last chapter, we learned that Lynn had been talking about various dog types that are unable to swim in the water because they are not built the same way as the dogs that can swim. They're more bulky and they sink to the bottom of the pool. For those dogs, it's necessary to put life jackets on them. Chapter 20, Pesto and a Dog's Place. The drive from Donatello's home near Milan to Genoa would take about 2 hours. We would be meeting with Admiral Angrisano, commander of the Guardia Costiera, and his crew. Bob, whom I had met during the training, had a sport utility vehicle large enough to comfortably carry Al, Donatella, and me. Donatella sat beside Bob so that they could talk about Al's upcoming test. Although I couldn't speak Italian, I could tell that Donatella was asking Bob many questions. Bob answered her in a bright, soothing voice as Al dozed in the back of her secured crate. We drove along the Autostrada A7, a highway that connects Milan and Genoa. Italian drivers drive fast, and they pay full attention to the road. We passed trucks, tankers, and compact cars, and flashed past fields that framed the highway. Some fields were filled with vibrant green rice paddies. Donatella explained that Italian farmers were growing new, coveted hybrid rice. For centuries, the Chinese had grown black rice known as forbidden rice. It was rare and only served to the emperors and their families. There were attempts to plant the forbidden rice in northern Italy. It couldn't endure the cold weathers. But recently, a rice hybridizer successfully crossed forbidden rice with a local northern Italian variety. The new whole grain rice, known as Venero Nero, Black Venice rice, is valued for its nutty flavor and sweetness and has 4 times more iron than white rice and contains high levels of antioxidants. Its hull has minerals like magnesium, manganese, and phosphorus. Venero Nero was a new health food, more expensive than common rice, but it was delicious, especially when served with seafood. I hoped all the conversation about food was helping to distract Donatella from worrying about the test. As we approached Genoa, a city that lies between the Ligurian Sea and the Apennine Mountains and spreads along the coast for about 30 kilometers, we drove through a series of long tunnels and onto an elevated highway that wove through the city, giving us glimpses of modern buildings, offices, and tall apartments. We parked and collected Al from the back of the SUV. She leaped out, ready to go. I think she felt Donatella's tension as she kept looking up at her with large gold eyes. She walked right beside her as Donatella led the way through a maze of cobblestone streets, across paved boulevards, and along winding alleys. The city was vibrant, even though it was early in the morning. People were walking in the streets in the business and casual clothing. Cyclists, motorcyclists, vans, and small trucks were navigating the narrow highways and streets, and the air was filled with sounds of vehicles, voices of people speaking Italian, and construction workers shouting over the din of the jackhammers. I caught a glimpse of people standing outside, chatting, sitting at the cafes, drinking espresso, and eating cornetta, a small Italian croissant, reading the newspapers, hanging out laundry from apartments overhead. The sound of bells rang from churches near and far. A handsome young man in his 30s walked across the street. He looked like he was on his way to work. He was wearing a tailored navy blue suit and seemed to be in a hurry, but he suddenly noticed a beautiful woman with long black hair and sunglasses wearing a flowing summer dress that was turquoise, yellow, white, and navy. The navy blue in her dress matched the man's suit. Recognizing each other, they smiled, and the young man ran to her. So caught up in their embrace, the couple was unaware of anything else in the world. People were stopping, watching, smiling with delight. Love was definitely in the air. I was definitely in Italy. We continued our walk, and I saw ancient buildings, plazas, and fountains, and cathedrals. Genoa was Columbus's hometown. There was a woman and a little boy looking at a monument celebrating Columbus. I wondered what she was saying to her son. Was she encouraging him to become a great explorer? To sail across great oceans? Was she telling him that he needed to sail beyond the bonds of what he knew and discover new things? Things that would enrich his life and the people his life touched? The little boy was completely focused on what his mother was saying until he saw pigeons land and stop to drink some water caught in the cracks between the stones. The cyclist came close to the pigeons. They lifted off in a wave of wings. Al saw them and charged. Donatella told her to stop. She wouldn't listen. Al was towing Donatella as she chased them. She yelled at her in a sharp tone and finally got her to stop. Al was so headstrong. I wondered if Donatella would be able to control her during the test. We continued our walk, and it felt like this was the natural rhythm of Genoa, a typical day in the coastal city, but there was nothing typical about this day for Donatella. The lines in the corners of her eyes looked even more tense. Suddenly, we got a whiff of warm baked bread, and I saw a sign for the Forneo, meaning bakery. Al lifted her big brown head, sniffed, and tasted the air. Her mouth started watering. Glancing at Donatella, she picked up her pace. As the bakery front, Al barked deep, loud barks, until a middle-aged man with black hair and brown eyes, wearing an apron smudged with flour, greeted us warmly. He scratched Al's head, and as she looked up at the baker with drool and adoration. Speaking to Al in Italian, he told her that he was happy to have her visit and that she was a good girl. He asked Donatella if he could give her a small piece of focaccia. Al took the bread from the baker's large, muscular hands, carefully making sure not to bite, and wagged her tail. Donatella knew that our walk to the Guardia Costiera would be slow and that we would be stopping frequently. A tiny woman with a curved back, probably in her 80s, was sweeping the sidewalk in front of her apartment. She stopped when she saw Al. She held the dog's massive head in her tiny hands and told Al she was a beautiful girl. A woman riding a bicycle stopped momentarily to ask about Al. Three teenage boys who turned a corner asked if she was a Terra Nova. They asked if she was one of the lifeguard dogs. Donatella said she was in training to be one. They thought that was awesome. People in Genoa and all over Italy and Europe recognized the water rescue dogs from the Scuola Italiana Cani Salvataggio. They knew that the dogs worked with the Guardia Costiera and that the dogs helped to save 8 to 10 people a year. They prevented hundreds of drownings by intervening before someone needed to be rescued. People came out of their shops when they saw Al walking by. She took up half the sidewalk and was hard to miss. A woman with her grandson asked if he could pet Al. Lowering her head, Al looked at the child in the eye and the small boy gently petted her. He wrapped his arm around Al's back, and she swished her tail quickly so he could hear her happiness. We had half an hour before our meeting, so Donatella and Bob offered to take me on a short walking tour of Genoa. It was good for Al to walk off some of the stress. They said, I think this was what Donatella was trying to do, too. We passed by the Palazzo Ducale. A young woman was sitting on the chair sketching a picture of the Venetian Gothic building. Donatella said it was called the Doge Palace. I heard her say Dog's Palace. Donatella explained that the Doge Palace was built in the 13th century. The building had served as the seat of the Genoan government, and today it housed several museums. All the year long, there were art shows and cultural events in the palace. The day was growing warm, and it was a relief when we reached Piazza dei Ferrari. A massive silver fountain shaped like a spineless sea urchin was filled with flowing water. The soothing sound dampened the roar of the nearby traffic, and a cool mist sprinkled our faces. Al was roasting in her thick brown coat. She sighed with relief when the spray hit her face. She decided the fountain was a perfect place to cool off. All she needed to do was to climb over the lip of the base. Dogs are not allowed in the fountain in Italy, but did she not read the signs? Taking a few powerful steps, Al was preparing to leap into the fountain. Donatella anticipated Al's next move, tightened her grip, and ordered her to stop before she broke the law. She stopped but continued to pull hard on the leash and resist Donatella. This was not good. If she could not control Al now, I wondered if she would listen to her when we were on the boat. We continued our walk past the intersection of the old town of Genoa and the modern financial part of the city, through a maze of narrow alleyways somewhere near Via Garibaldi. We passed Baroque palaces and San Lorenzo Cathedral and reached a gate at the Guardia Costiera building. A guard checked our names and invited us in and offered us seats. He said Admiral Angrisano would be with us shortly. Donatella sat for a few moments, handed Al's leash to Bob, and stood up and paced. She was trying to walk off her nervousness, and I think she was trying to put a distance between herself and Al so the dog would not be so nervous. It seemed to be working. Al was sprawled out on the floor with her head resting on her paws and her eyes shut, but her ears were moving in the direction of Donatella's footsteps. Admiral Angrisano greeted us warmly. He was a medium-sized man, strong, vital, in dark brown eyes and silvering hair. He looked distinguished in his Guardia Costiera uniform, striding quickly across the room like he was racing from one meeting to another. Admiral Angrisano immediately shook our hands. When Al saw him, she jumped up and wagged her tail. From the expression on the admiral's face, the way he looked directly at Al with a soft smile, it was clear that he was a dog person. And just being near her was bringing the admiral's blood pressure down. Al leaned toward him, and he rubbed her head. She looked blissful. Admiral Angrisano spoke English fluently. He said he had read about swimming, and he knew about my career, and he was impressed. I told him that through the years I'd received a lot of help from people, including the United States Coast Guard. When I needed to find out information about a waterway and find a boat support, they had pointed me in the right direction. I had friends in the U.S. Coast Guard, some of whom worked with canines, and I was thrilled to meet him and his crew and have the opportunity to go on patrol with them. He said that they loved working with the water rescue dogs, that the dogs made people happy. He was smiling as he said it and gave the Guardia Costiera a friendly face. But the dogs were far more than their mascots. They were directly involved in rescuing people. He was impressed with all the water rescue dogs and proud to be working with them. During one training exercise, he said he saw a Newfoundland pull in 6 people at one time. He added that the water rescue dogs were trained to watch for someone raising their arms in the water. That was the signal that the person was in distress, and the dog would react to that cue. The admiral gave me background about the sea and about the area. He said that the old harbor, Porto Antico, had been beautifully redesigned and restored by modern architect Renzo Piano. His name was familiar, as he was the architect for the New York Times building. Quickly, he told me about the importance of Genoa. It was the second largest seaport in Italy and one of the largest harbors in Europe. The Guardia Costiera were active in the port. They were involved with search and rescue and boating safety, served as maritime police, investigated maritime accidents, and had many more tasks. This kept them busy, but he said he worked with highly trained and dedicated people. I would see this when I met with his crew on board their patrol boat. Turning to Al, he said, "Good luck, Al, with your test." He petted her again on the head and said, "We have great confidence in you, Al." Donatella smiled tightly, hoping Al would be emerging from his test as a certified canine lifeguard. Donatella had worked with Al every day and saw that she was good-natured, curious, and attentive. She had immediately showed a great aptitude to swim and rescue people. Donatella had faith in Al, but she could be stubborn and do what she wanted to do rather than obeying. Donatella had been consistent, calm, and firm with her. But she didn't know how she would perform during the lifeguard test, and that made Donatella nervous. She hoped Al would not embarrass her. Next week, we'll read Semper Paratus Backstroke in the book Tales of Al, The Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete, by Lynn Cox. Our next reading comes from Best Friends, the March-April 2025 edition. Their slogan, "Together we can save them all." This article, "Saving Lives Amid Wildfires." Best Friend responds to state of emergency in Los Angeles. The day began with business as usual on a bright January morning, a Tuesday, at the Best Friends Pet Adoption Center, tucked near the 405 freeway in Los Angeles. Santa Ana winds rustled palm fronds, stole scraps of paper, and tipped trash cans. Up in the hills above Pacific Palisades, less than 10 miles from the center as the crow flies, a glowing spark turned into an orange flame, crackling along the ground. Best Friends staff and volunteers arrived for their shifts to clean kennels, walk dogs, scoop kitty litter boxes, and otherwise prepare to open the center's doors to the public at 11 a.m. On the other side of the freeway, winds fanned the flames. Fire gobbled dry vegetation that carpeted the hills as far as the eye could see. The blaze advanced as fast as the gusting winds could carry it, and by 11:30, people in the Pacific Palisades neighborhood began to see the flames, smell the smoke. They grabbed their children and pets, got their cars, and fled. By the time city officials issued an evacuation order for Pacific Palisades, just after the noon, traffic was already at a standstill with people trying to get away. Smoke billowed down the mountains, fire caught and consumed homes, schools, businesses, and everything else in its path, sending out embers that would spark yet even more fire. From that afternoon and on, every day for weeks following, it was anything but business as usual. Best Friends is no stranger to helping save animal lives along the country after hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, as well as human-made emergencies. But this marked the first time the crisis came to us. The sky blazed orange above the Best Friends Pet Adoption Center roof, and smoke choked the air. Staff followed emergency protocols and prepared to move every single animal out of a moment's notice if needed. The situation evolved as far as the Santa Ana winds spread the danger even farther. While firefighters began the Herculean job of curbing it, as terrible and all-consuming as the fire was from the moment it began, the best of humanity rose to meet the challenge. People banded together to take care of each other and the animals whose lives depended on them more than ever before. A flood of support. The phone and the doorbell at the center rang nonstop, starting that first day, said Brittany Thorne, Best Friends executive director in Los Angeles. But while the staff was at the center, they were still grappling with emergency situations. People were already asking how they could help. What could they do? It became clear that whatever happened, there was an army of animal lovers willing to pitch in. But that evening, the fire had burned large enough through the areas of Pacific Palisades, and the Santa Ana winds, gusts as strong as 100 miles an hour, sent embers sailing, where they took hold and sparked even more flames. Flames tore through Altadena and erased entire neighborhoods. When a smoky dawn broke the next morning, the sky was an eerie reddish pink, and the shell-shocked people took stock of what had just happened, ever vigilant in watching the direction the fires were moving. The scope of the disaster was becoming clear, and it solidified what Best Friends needed to do next. 24 hours after the fires began, people started arriving at the animal shelters around the city with their pets who needed temporary care. Thousands of families had to evacuate, and many were faced with uncertain living arrangements in hotels or with friends or relatives where their pets may not be able to stay long term. The animal shelters could help, but they needed the space and the resources to safely house people's pets. But the shelter throughout Los Angeles and LA County are notoriously overflowing, operating at as much as 200% capacity when there isn't a far-reaching natural disaster at play. That's where Best Friends, with offers of support flooding in, could best help. Best Friends' chosen role in disasters has long been to help free up space, staff time, and resources by taking in pets who were already in the shelter before the disaster. Brittany says, the very best thing we could do is to support our others and other shelters by taking in their adoptable animals. And with all the offers to assist, she felt confident that they could pay it forward to others. The Best Friends team sprang into action, drove a van to Pasadena Humane, and just a few miles from the Eaton fire destruction in the Altadena area. People were already beginning to arrive at the shelter with their pets for temporary care. The team loaded up 17 animals who'd been at the shelter before the fires and brought them to the adoption center for what turned out to be a short layover. The animals moved out quickly as they arrived. In fact, people were so eager to foster that every pet who had already been on the site at the center had a place to go. In a single day, the team had moved 51 animals out of our center. There were 11 adoptions and 40 pets went into foster homes. With the center empty of animals and people answering the calls to foster, the team set out again to pick up even more animals for more shelters. Fires continued to spread, and the next day they picked up 90 cats and 41 dogs from the LA City and County shelters. When the staff got back to the center with all the animals that day, the lobby was full of people waiting to foster or adopt. The veterinary team acted fast to examine each pet, administer vaccines, and triage those who needed extra care. They worked through the night and sent dozens more pets home with people who wanted to foster them. At the same time, with more fires popping up throughout the entire region, and quickly, overwhelming emergency services helped to fight the fires and to provide human services started flooding in from farther away. This went from a local emergency response for us to a national one almost immediately, says Mark Peralta, Best Friends Chief Program Officer. The local community in Los Angeles was responding, but with a need so great, we began tapping other teams throughout Best Friends to help. It was only the beginning and already time to access a larger network to move animals out to Utah with love. Best Friends Animal Sanctuary is designed both for long-term and special care for dogs, cats, and other kinds of animals, but it is also beautifully appointed to act as a hub for animals on a journey out of shelters and into organizations that have the space and resources to place them in homes. There's a veterinary team and a staff of caregivers, an entire building serving as a soft spot for pets to land when they arrive, where the plan is for them to move out again or to stay longer. None of this was new. Moving pets out of the area like Los Angeles, where shelters are full, to areas with capacity to take them is in a key part of how Best Friends saves pets every day. The teams at Dogtown and Cat World assured the LA team that they were standing by and ready to take in animals. And farther afield, 5 hours north of the sanctuary, the team in Salt Lake City felt the same. Fill the van and send it up. The first trip from LA to the sanctuary embarked on Thursday after the fires first broke out. It carried 33 dogs and cats. There were first animal refugees to leave the smoke and chaos behind them for good. A fast track out of the shelter where they'd landed before the fires and on to fresh start in a new city. The outpouring of support was just as strong in Utah as it was in LA. In Salt Lake City, the team got responding and the foster caregivers and rescue groups and all wanted to help animals from LA. It turned out that they could take in even more pets than the 33 who had just come up. It was a chance to free up space at the sanctuary so they could keep taking in more and more animals from LA as needs continued. So the next day, another van left with more than 50 pets destined for homes in Salt Lake City. Days into the disaster, with the fires nowhere near contained and more evacuation orders and planned power outages throughout the city, Best Friends team in LA just kept going with support from the entire organization. Mark said, "We really needed a lot of ways to move the animals out faster, but of course there was a way. Best Friends reached out to Wings of Rescue, an organization that specializes in flying shelter pets where they need to go to start new lives. On very short notice, the team prepared to fill a plane with dogs and cats. On Saturday, the first flight with 84 pets on board took off from Burbank Airport and landed in Kanab, Utah, where sanctuary staff were waiting to unload them. 4 days later, Wings of Rescue piloted a second flight, this one with 87 dogs and cats, making stops both to Best Friends in Salt Lake City and the sanctuary. Every day, Best Friends measured the capacity to take animals via the pet adoption center in LA, at the sanctuary, and in Salt Lake City, and then sent vans to shelters in LA that had the greatest needs. There was still a chance we'd have to evacuate the center, so we could only commit to taking in pets that we knew we had immediate placement for. At any time, there are thousands of animals in LA City and county shelters, and Best Friends is one of several organizations working with them to move pets out. To encourage even more groups to assist the shelters directly, Best Friends offered stipends of up to $500 per pet for network partners to take in animals, especially large dogs, directly from the shelters themselves. The stipends would help offset the animals' transportation and care. Soon, partner organizations were reaching out to their own foster and volunteer networks, and they began taking in pets from impacted shelters in LA, too. 2 weeks after the fires began, Best Friends and our partners had taken in more than 700 pets from Los Angeles area shelters. Pets who had been in shelters there for days, weeks, and months were finally leaving in droves, and they were leaving alive. This article comes from Best Friends, the March-April 2025 edition. The slogan for Best Friends is, "Together we can save them all." Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.